This is the Michael K. Show podcast. Listen live weekday afternoon starting at 3 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.
This is the Michael K. Show.
How does Dallas make sense? And it actually gave me even more respect for what Sean Marks pulled off here. Because while a lot of people could say this is a light load considering Kyrie's talent, you're getting his talent plus whatever mishigas comes with it, whatever nonsense comes along. Now you're going to add him to Dallas, where you have one of the best players in the league, but unlike Kevin Durant, is a player who requires the ball in his hand a lot. He's struggled in New York, and I understand New York is a bigger media hub than Dallas, but A, Dallas is a huge sports media hub, and I don't think I'm pointing out anything crazy in saying, in terms of like-mindedness, Kyrie's going to do a lot better with the population in New York than he's going to do in Dallas.
The Michael K. Show.
You think you're going to be the guy that's going to fix him?
On 98.7 ESPN.
All right, our continuing coverage of the Kyrie Irving net situation brought to you by 2 by London, the engagement shop at London Jewelers. This is a guy that if you're not following on Twitter, you should, because he knows what's going on when it comes to the cap, and he's been there. He's done that as an NBA GM. Bobby Marks is our GM at ESPN, and he joins us now to help us make sense of the Kyrie trade on both sides of the aisle. Bobby, it's Michael, Don, and Peter. How are you?
I'm good, guys. How are you?
Doing well. So first off, from a perspective of a guy who did this job, did Sean Marks do as well as he could do in this trade?
Yes. I mean, considering the circumstances of a player asked to be traded, you know, last Friday, about a week, less than a week before the deadline, expiring contract. We all know the track record with Irving the last 4 years, and including certainly in Boston and Cleveland here, I thought he probably got as much as he could, you know, considering what the Lakers and Phoenix and the Clippers are offering. So, yeah, I mean, you have three draft assets. You can start building that back up or use again, and then you get two players that can either you can start or help now that aren't on an expiring contract. So I think considering the circumstances, Brooklyn probably did as best as they could.
Now, I think I know the answer to it, but I want to see the GM's mindset. I'm a vindictive human being, Bobby. So if somebody did this to me, I'd go, you're not getting traded. And if you don't want to play, you could sit your butt on the bench and not play. Why would that have hurt the Nets if that happened?
Yeah, you have to eventually take the human element out of it. And I agree with you. There is a part of me that would have said, you know what, you could just sit at home for the rest of the year here. But I think when you look at it big picture here, I think how is that going to help with Kevin Durant, right? And that's the million-dollar question going forward as far as keeping a guy at Irving at home and, you know, spiting him for asking to be traded, and then you don't move off, and then he leaves in the offseason for nothing, and now you're dealing with Durant again. So I think that's the big reason why, you know, Sean Marks, you know, looked at what's best for the organization, not what's best for his ego here, and moved off the Irving contract.
Bobby, what would you have done if you were a general manager of an NBA team? Would you have been captivated by the talent? Would you still want Kyrie despite all the baggage?
Well, we all do, Don. I mean, that's a fault for us, right? We all think that whether it be a Jason Kidd in Dallas or Tyronn Lue in with the Clippers or LeBron in Los Angeles, that we all think that it doesn't matter what the baggage that player has, that we can welcome him with open arms and that we are going to be the organization that can solve whatever is going on with Kyrie Irving. For me, no, it wouldn't, just because I think the track record is there, as I said, in the last, you know, last 7 years here. So I get it. I think from Dallas's perspective, it's pretty interesting here is that I don't know if there'll be a long-term marriage here between both sides. I think what you'll see is he's going to be, for the next 4 months, he is going to be auditioning for another contract here, and I think Dallas can just walk away if things don't work out. And I know the price was rich to give up, but I think that's kind of what you might see here.
So can any GM, Bobby, at the end of the season, you know, realistically, without like hallucinogenic drugs, give this guy a 4-year, $200 million deal? Guaranteed?
No.
So what do you think the best he can do?
I think the best that he could do is what he's eligible for right now is, you know, 2 years, $80 million. I really think that's the best he could do, because any of these places where he could have went, whether it be the Clippers or the Lakers. I mean, I think what you have to do is align him with what other contracts you have on your books, whether it been LeBron or Paul George or Kawhi Leonard. It's hard for me to commit 4 years guaranteed for as good of a player he is. I couldn't do it. As I said on Friday, he's a max player. He's an all-star, he's an all-MVP, all-NBA type player, but he's a max player on a year-to-year basis.
But he doesn't want he doesn't seem to want to accept that.
Well, I think, you know, what's going to happen is there's going to be a little bit of a self-awareness when he gets to Dallas and he could be staring at 2 years, you know, $80 million in the offseason, and there's not going to be many other shooters out there for him this summer. It's going to be kind of probably a little bit of a better market than it was last offseason. Remember, here's a player that couldn't find another home and had to opt into that contract.
Is there a world, Bobby, in which KD just says, like, oh, you know what? I'm down to stick around and see this thing through. Because I just can't get over the – I know everyone's very flippant about saying they should just blow it up. But to me, when you have someone of KD's ilk in the locker room, if he's willing to be there, it seems that you'd be better off building around him than trying to start over again.
Well, that's the goal. And I think it's going to be interesting what happens in the next three days here. You know, they've got, you know, 3 first-round picks they can go out and move, and they've got some contracts they can still move here. I don't see anything happening with Durant. You know, I'd be surprised if all of a sudden tomorrow he wakes up and says, you know, I want out. I think that's probably a decision that will be discussed in the offseason here. But, yeah, I mean, you guys have seen him before his injury. I mean, we're talking about him as an MVP-type candidate here, a closer. Those are hard to find at the end of the game. And I think the best thing to do is to continue to look for trades that can upgrade this roster and not blow it up. If they wanted to blow it up, guys, they would have just done the Lakers deal. Right, you would have just taken, you know, the 2 first-round picks and Russell Westbrook and go from there. And, you know, Durant would have probably asked to be traded. But I think the Dallas trade showed you that they're still trying to kind of improve this roster.
But even with the trade they made with Dallas, Bobby, they didn't bring in the star that Durant was. That Irving was. They had 2 really good players come in. But is that enough to keep Durant here? Because it doesn't, like, Simmons is that player either.
Well, that's the big thing, right? Like, what are we getting out of Ben Simmons here? And I think if we had the Ben Simmons of Philadelphia, and not even at that level, I mean, just as a starter level, like, I mean, I don't know if he's I don't even know if he's a rotational player right now. How you know, before this injury here, then you could probably make a better argument to where Durant could say, you know what, I've got Ben Simmons as my wingman. We've got two good solid starters. So now he's looking at the roster, right, as a nice bunch of starters. You know, there's not that top starter out there, all-star, that he can kind of pair up with. And it's going to be fascinating because he's injured. If he was playing tonight against the Clippers, we could say tomorrow, this roster is not bad with Durant here, but we're kind of in that wait-and-see mode.
You know, we talk about the different ways of building a team, Bobby. There's the Philadelphia way, the process. That really hasn't worked. I mean, the Nets can be a cautionary tale for the super team, Lakers to a certain extent as well. When you look at it as a general manager, is just building through the draft and making right trades like Milwaukee did, like Golden State did before and after Durant, is that still the best way to go?
Yeah, it is, I think. But it does eventually – you are – sometimes hit a little bit of a ceiling. I think we're seeing it in probably Memphis right now is a great example, right? I mean, 11 out of the 15 players on that roster are homegrown. They're drafted here. But is that good enough to get you to the NBA finals? And they have certainly struggled of late here. But, yeah, I mean, that's the best way to do it. The problem comes is that you get to a point where you just run out of patience, and then you do one of these trades and you're moving, you know, 2 first-round picks or 3 first-round picks here, and then it certainly can backfire, but in a perfect world, yeah, the draft is the way to go. But as I said, many teams don't have the patience to do that.
Talking with Bobby Marks, our ESPN NBA front office insider. Listen, I can't second guess Bobby signing Durant and Irving. I mean, 2 transcendent players. But where I think it went off the tracks for Sean, I don't know if you agree, didn't he get a little greedy with the Harden deal? Because that kind of changed everything. And also letting go of Kenny Atkinson changed things as well. What's your take on the Harden deal? Because The Harden deal now is a complete mess of what they gave up and what they got back for him. There's no way you could reconcile that.
I completely agree with you. I've heard all day that this Durant-Irving marriage has been a disaster, and if you pulled all 30 teams and you had cap space in 2019 and you didn't have to trade anybody, every team would have signed both players. Now, what happened was is that the Harden trade turned into an ultimate disaster. I mean, they had, with Caris LeVert and Jared Allen and, you know, Dinwiddie here, that was the perfect way. You know, you slide those two players in with Durant and Irving and you had the nucleus around. And when you do a deal like that and you give, I always say you only have one swing at the fence when you're doing a trading three first or four first and pick swaps here. And now you're doing a little bit of a backtrack here and trying to recoup what you lost. But you're right. I mean, you know, that's the patience level, right? Sometimes we run out of patience here, but that's where not the signing, but the Harden trade is kind of where, as you said, kind of the, you know, things went off track.
So weird, such a weird weird occurrence with the Nets, and it looked like they were building it the right way, changing the culture, and then the whole thing blew up. Bobby, I know you were there as an assistant GM. We thank you for your time for sure.
Thanks, man.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
All right, that's Bobby Marks, our NBA front office insider at ESPN. So. It's weird. It's weird. The Harden deal was the bad part, because you know that Kyrie could be a pain, but you knew that he was great and he played more than he played with the Nets wherever he was. He played somewhat more. So even if you got him for 60 out of 82 games, you sign up for that because of the talent. But the Harden thing, that was a case of being greedy. You know, they wanted a big three, like Miami had a big three. But look at this Net team with Kyrie and Durant and with Dinwiddie and Allen and Caris LeVert. That's enough pieces to win a championship. I think they just got stars in their eyes about Harden.
Do you guys listen? I don't say a lot of smart things on the show, but you guys remember I would not let go of that at the time.
You were right.
I thought it was such a greedy move because I thought two things. One, you have enough pieces. Do you really need a third superstar?
Wow.
Also, how are there going to be enough balls on the court for these guys to even get their shots? And then lastly, Don, You're getting rid of all the young talent that this fan base had fallen in love with over the last couple of years. And that was, to me, I think Mark's got a lot of the things he attempted to do right. It just blew up in his face because you can't control the players. But I do think the Harden one was an absolute mistake.
You have
to be a little bit, I guess you have to have such tunnel vision if you're a GM. Sean Marks traded for 2029 first round pick. Talk about, like, pie in the sky. What's the likelihood he's even going to be with the Nets?
I know.
What's the likelihood we'll be alive in 2029? I mean, that is really down the road, man, unless he turns those first-round draft picks into a trade, because there's a lot of supposition that maybe Dinwiddie could be on the move, so he's got some first-round draft picks to deal. But dealing for 2029? Wow.
You know, Peter ended up being right. My defense of the Harden deal is another reason why getting into bed with Irving just really killed them, is because the reason I defended Harden, guy, was because you had KD coming off a catastrophic injury. And with Kyrie's situation, even then, of his availability, kind of forced the issue of just, you could look at it as being excess, but I think they were looking at, hey, I don't know if we're going to have these two guys on the court, so we need to get that third guy for when one of these guys are out. Remember, KD just came off of missing an entire season, and then Kyrie, was having his issues with at that particular time, because that was pre-vaccine, or right around the vaccine was all the social justice stuff. So can I even think that this guy is going to be on the court for the majority of these games? Did we need somebody else? And there were times where they did need Harden because KD and Kyrie weren't available.
What a mess. And Peter, congratulations.
What's that?
On a rare, really smart take.
That is a left-handed compliment.
No, it's so not. Backhanded, maybe, but not left-handed.
Yeah, no, not left-handed. Just full-on backhanded.
Why left-handed people?
Yeah.
Well, I'm sorry. I should have said backhanded. I don't know why I said left-handed. My wife's left-handed. I'm not trying
to. Yeah, now you're taking a shot at
deep water.
So, but a backhanded compliment for sure. That was a backhanded compliment because he gets it right a lot. He gets it right a lot more than he gets it wrong.
That's true. I love Peter. You know that. And I also love our next guest.
Who's that?
Jay Williams.
I know that guy.
Of KJM in the Morning on ESPN Radio. So, Jay, we thank you for joining us. I know it's been a busy day for you. How you doing?
I'm doing good, Michael. Before we get started, I just want to say happy belated birthday. Don, I know you got a birthday coming up. Happy pre-birthday.
Wow.
And Rosenberg, I know you're a Maryland guy, so you know, it's not until July, but I will wish you a
birthday. Wow. He came prepared today.
Wow.
That is very good.
That's
locked and
loaded.
Doing my homework, guys. That's all.
Locked and loaded.
I am now siding with Jay the rest of the interview.
Okay. All right.
Rosenberg comes at me on social media, which I thoroughly enjoy, so I kind of like this whole Duke-Maryland thing we got going on. It's followed us for a long time.
Yeah, absolutely. By the way, you saw my Terps win by 50 over the weekend, right? Just saying.
I'd rather not talk about that.
Yeah, but his Duke team beat North Carolina.
Yeah, no. Listen, he has a reason to be proud.
Tell me, Jay, as a former player, how will it work with Kyrie and Luka, two guys who seem like they need the basketball? Now, I know that Kyrie has excelled with great players before, but, boy, Luka seems to always have the basketball.
Well, I think the biggest challenge you got with Luka, guys, is that, you know, LeBron, when people would say, I've always thought that Luka was like a less athletic, more skilled version of LeBron at that age of his career, right? But one of the things LeBron does so well is it's the hockey assist. LeBron gives the ball up extremely early and makes right plays, right? Where Luka dominates the ball, and a lot of players don't end up shooting until 4 or 5 seconds left on the shot clock, which, you know, leads to a lot of different ill will in between teammates. So I think this is going to be heavily on Jason Kidd to make this 3 month, this 4 month rental work before Kyrie has a chance to be ultimately an unrestricted free agent. But they do have a high isolation style of play basketball. It is going to be one of the most exciting styles we will have seen Luka and the Dallas Mavericks play thus yet.
Jay, if you were on an NBA team that acquired Kyrie, what word would describe how you'd feel about that?
Manage. You got to manage expectations. I think, you know, I think that's where things went wrong in Brooklyn. And I sat up there on First Take today, which turned into like a bomb of a show.
Oh, really?
And
hadn't even noticed. Go ahead.
So I'm like, I'm not absolving Kyrie of some of the challenges. Like, and I've said that openly, publicly. I think communication is everything for him to communicate to ownership, to communicate to the front office about what he's feeling, how they're going to work on that together. Right. And I think now moving forward for Mark Cuban, it's about, hey, I have an open door policy. If there's anything that goes on, you come and you talk to me. Like, you don't need to go away and be in your corner and do it here. Like, let's deal with things together, because our ultimate goal here is to win a championship. And this is a fresh start. And I think Mark is probably going to approach it very different than what Joe Tsai had to approach it, because of what Joe had to deal with as it relates to KD and James Harden and Sean Marks, that at times couldn't probably say things directly to people the way you will want your GM to talk to players.
Let me talk about responsibility here. Again, you've been in that room, so you could speak to it better. Kyrie and Kevin were packaged together. They came to Brooklyn to win a championship. This team has a chance to win a championship, and Kyrie and Kevin are healthy. I mean, they won 18 of 20 games. Then Kyrie, because he didn't get the contract that he wanted, said, I'm out. I want to be traded. Is that fair to Kevin? And you think that Kevin is ticked off at Kyrie?
Yes. Latter part of your question, I think Kevin is disappointed. To your first question, Don, like, I'm going to sit there and say, I've struggled with that. And I, you know, because KD is one of these guys, all he wants to do is hoop.
Right.
And here he is on a team that once had James Harden, Kyrie Irving. It was the best trio maybe the game of basketball has ever seen. And now he's looking at Ben Simmons, who knows if he's going to play at times. And he's looking at Spencer Dinwiddie, who was here before he got here, and a whole bunch of picks, wondering, am I going to entrust the rest of my career to Sean Marks and to the Brooklyn Nets? So I do feel bad for him that way. I also know from the sources that I've spoken to that, like, you know, the contract that Kyrie got, that extension, was a slap in the face, Don. Like, that relationship was never going to work anyway. So, you know, I would have probably stayed to play it through with Kevin Durant, because I would have felt like I owed that to KD with what I've been through, but that's me. And sometimes when you get involved in the business of a sport, it was one of these things where I guess Kyrie and his camp felt like, well, how long are you going to draw this out? And will you continue to, you know, will all these reports continue to be leaked to the media? Because a lot of things that we've been hearing have been very much from the Nets' perspective. It hasn't been from Kyrie's perspective. And I think that, at the end of the day, was too much of a weight on him, and he wanted to move on with his career and get a fresh start. I'm not saying it's right, Don. I'm just trying to give you insight into how they're thinking.
Well, to get the timeline, now, do you think any assurances to Kyrie happened before the tweet and the suspension, and that might have soured the Nets on giving him what they maybe would originally have given him when the season started?
I thought before, you know, what I heard was that, you know, he had an offer for an extension in return for him taking the vaccine. He then turned that down, and that caused a little bit of a rift. And then what I heard is after they lost to Boston, which they got swept, his team kept trying to reach out to have extension talks, and that never really happened. And then, obviously, when the reposting of the Hebrews to Negroes thing happened, when Joe Tsai went public about it, it caused even more friction. And we saw Nick Friedell today in the studio. We were talking, and everybody remembers that spat that Nick Friedell mm-hmm. had with Kyrie back and forth. And I was like, that was me. That was not to me. That wasn't Kyrie talking to Nick. I think that was more Kyrie digging his heels in the sand because he was speaking more to the organization about how he felt like he was now being attacked, and now this was something else that he had to fight through. So I think, once again, from his perspective, he felt like maybe this thing was never going to work, and that's why he wanted to get out and go to Dallas.
So what was your feeling as someone who has, you know, you clearly have a soft spot for Kyrie and appreciate him as a player? And by the way, I think in my limited experience with him, I see why it's easy to have that, because I do think he's a really kind, warm dude. What was your thought when you heard he requested the trade? Because you have to admit, things had gotten pretty quiet. Like, considering how crazy things were around that documentary, it had really quieted down, and people were kind of just watching him play. Were you surprised? What was your feeling when you heard he demanded the trade?
My first question was, why, Pete? I was like, why? Why right now? So I started doing digging. I started doing research, and then I found out that they had offered him a 3-year extension, and the last year was contingent upon him winning an NBA championship. So then I called some of my, you know, people that have a lot of experience in upper management and the front office of organizations. They then proceeded to tell me there are about 4 to 5 players in the NBA right now who have this stipulation in their contract, but no player is even close to the magnitude of being an all-star or at the level Kyrie Irving is. So I think once having nuance and understanding that, knowing that they've been trying to get this extension for a while, I guess it kind of made me look at it a little bit more reasonable instead of just reacting and saying, here's another thing happening to Kyrie Irving doing to the organization.
Now, one final thing, Jay, before we let you go. So the 3 years and did he have to win a championship in the first two to have the third year guaranteed? Is that essentially it?
Yes.
Okay, so we just had Bobby Marks on. He said there's no NBA team that's given him a 4-year max. At most, he's going to get a 2-year, $80 million deal. So does Kyrie think that by going somewhere else, that deal is going to manifest itself? Where?
I mean, frankly, I think Kyrie wants to end up in L.A. when it's all said and done with LeBron James.
Right.
I was going to tell you, he did, but I also think that was at a different stage of his career where he didn't really understand how difficult and challenging it was to carry the torch of an organization by himself. And I think the experiences he's had with Boston, what just happened with KD and company, I think we're going to see him in Dallas, and then I think we're going to see him as an unrestricted free agent, probably sign with the Los Angeles Lakers.
Jay, thank you for always making time for us. Yeah. We really do appreciate it.
You got it, boys. Have a good one.
All right. Jay Williams, from ESPN.
Duke sucks. Sorry.
And when we come back, nice. We're going to get another perspective, one more perspective on the Kyrie situation. We're covering this like a glove because – really, arguably, not arguably, it's the biggest story in sports right now. Richard Jefferson of the YES Network and ESPN is going to join us, and then we'll shift to football after that. So Richard Jefferson with us on the Kay Show in just a moment here on YES and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael Kay Show podcast.
Hey, buddy, hey.
Catch the show on demand wherever you want. Just subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
As we continue our coverage of the Kyrie Irving situation, brought to you by 2 by London, the engagement shop by London Jewelers, Picker designed the perfect engagement ring to fit every budget at any of their 6 area locations. Well, the deal is not official yet. Woj is reporting ESPN sources have told him Nets-Mavs trade still hasn't been made official with the league office because the Nets are evaluating opportunities to expand the deal with a third team. Teams are expected to make two-way deal official in next couple of hours unless the Nets find something bigger to fold into it. Many conversations in the league are going through one team today, the Toronto Raptors.
Mm-hmm.
So that 2029 draft pick, I don't think it's going to be a net pick for a while. I don't think that Spencer Dinwiddie is going to be a net for a while. If they do turn this into a three-way deal, I think he's going to be folded into it.
Now, if they can't get it done, then the pre-existing deal goes through. So it's not like Kyrie's coming back to Brooklyn. It's just a matter of whether they can sweeten the pot or not. So we'll find out soon.
Amazing stuff. Very complicated stuff, too. And, you know, I agree with PETA. Peter.
Who's PETA?
PETA. They save animals, but PETA is the guy who's on the show. I think Sean Marks did about as well as he could do. I mean, you got a guy who's demanding a trade publicly. I mean, couldn't you have just demanded the trade privately so he could work from a position of strength? And just consider this, too. They gave Kyrie the opportunity to go talk to other teams to put a deal together. Couldn't find it. Couldn't find that team at the beginning of the season or at the end of last season. So they held on to him rather than give him away for 10 cents on the dollar. He built his value up enough by playing as well as he did that they could get something. Now, with Kevin Durant, you know, talk about blowing it up. You could set this team up for the next 5 or 6 years by having a mega deal right now. What team would not want Kevin Durant, who's going to be healthy in about a week? Kevin Durant is one of the top 3 players in all of basketball, and he signed for 3 more years. So they can consider that as well. Now let's bring in the great Richard Jefferson. He's an analyst on YES and also on ESPN. Just got off a flight and was nice enough to make some time for us. Richard, it's Michael, Don, and Peter. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you guys for having me, guys. Big fan.
Well, thank you very much. Richard, did the Nets do the right thing, or should they have told Kyrie, sorry, you got to play?
No, I think they 100% did the right thing. I think both parties had kind of come to a pass last summer, like when you just mentioned that they, you know, gave him permission to go, you know, search and see if there was a deal or a team that they could figure out. So when they get to this spot right now, and even after all that transpired this summer, he was in the fall, he was playing outstanding basketball, one of the best players in basketball, in my opinion. And so when the idea of him wanting an extension, because he had played well, and the team was not ready to meet, you know, they couldn't come together on terms, I think they were kind of under the idea that it was a move on. Now, how to handle those things, whether it's publicly, privately, you know, those are the things that, you know, you get into a lot more opinions versus just kind of like what should be done.
But in your opinion, could the Nets have handled this any differently and made it work with Kyrie?
I think in any divorce or any situation, especially of this magnitude, I think both sides always, you know, wish things were differently. Try and handle things in a different way. Look, this is not what they wanted, right? At the end of the day, when Kyrie and KD came here and the Nets won the summer, and I'm up here thinking that, you know, this is the beginning of, you know, one, maybe two championships or some quality runs for the next 5-7 years, and there was just, you know, situation after situation and injuries and this. And so, you know, sometimes it's best to just you know, take your losses and keep it pushing.
Is there a world in which KD buys in still, Richard, and they can build around him versus blowing this entire thing up?
That's tough. I can't speak for Kevin Durant. I don't know him on that type of level. Is there a situation that's really up to Kevin Durant? That's up to Kevin Durant and the Nets' ability to basically sell themselves, right? We've seen this before. I remember Kobe Bryant asked for a trade, and they were exploring a trade. I think it was for him to go to Chicago. And that's Kobe Bryant talking about leaving the Lakers. And they were able to kind of settle things down. And then, you know, obviously he had the history there. But, you know, they were real talks there. So I think, Kevin, you know, if you're a Nets fan, you should always be optimistic that maybe they can, you know, put some things together and convince Kevin Durant to be the person that they build around. Because they're not, the cupboards aren't there in Brooklyn. There's still tons of talent there. That's why when Kyrie plays, they're 1, 2, 3 best team in the league.
Richard,
so I think it's a very difficult way to kind of end. And, you know, now all eyes are on Kevin Durant.
All right, so Richard, you know Jason Kidd pretty well. How's he going to make this work between two guys that are ball dominant?
Well, I think, look, LeBron is ball dominant also, and Kyrie won a championship with him. I think Kyrie, even though he is a point guard, his more natural space is a high-level scorer. So, you know, very similar to how he conceded to James Harden, who's ball dominant, right? And was like, hey, you go play point guard, and I'll score around. Because that means that every time Kyrie touches the ball, yes, is he making the right play? But he is focused on scoring. Like, Luka, you go get your 10, 12 assists, and Kyrie's an amazing spot-up shooter. Like, he's a high, high-level spot-up shooter. He's a, you know, 50, 40, 90 guy. So I think Kyrie's already succeeded with LeBron James, who is a ball-dominant guy, and he moved to the two-guard spot. He conceded to James Harden, who was a ball-dominant guy. James Harden led the league in assists. A lot of it is because he's passing to guys like Kyrie, who can go get buckets. And, you know, so now I think with Luka, I think that's a more natural position for Kyrie, is to be off the ball as a primary 1A, 1B scorer.
So what's the ceiling right now for this Nets team this year?
And again, that all depends on Kevin Durant. If he's healthy, if they come back, you know, again, I don't like to play the speculation games because, you know, players have families and they have, you know, so I won't say names, but you know, with a player of Kevin Durant's caliber, if you get, you know, an all-star caliber player and probably one or two other players back, you would imagine that, you know, this team can make the postseason. If Kevin Durant plays, 100% they make the postseason. So it just depends, and a lot of it hinges on, you know, what transpires over the next week now that we're in the trade deadline.
Tom, with Richard Jefferson. Richard, before we let you go, did Kyrie owe it to Kevin to play this season out? I mean, he actually made Kevin go to Brooklyn. I mean, Kevin's obviously an adult, made his own mind up, but, you know, Kyrie certainly sold it. We're going to do this together. And then because of money, and I understand money drives the world, but he just leaves them high and dry on a team that, with Durant and Irving, in my opinion, had a chance to win a championship. Did he owe it to Kevin to stay?
Well, look, they both had trade requests. Let's go back to the summer, right? This summer, they both were trying to exit the Nets. So at that point in time, it's like whoever exits first, whoever exits second, you could see that if things weren't able to be fixed, whether like Kyrie was going to get a long-term contract, Kevin Durant asked to leave. So I can't say that players, you know, I can't speak for their relationship or saying, you know, does Kevin Durant feel that way? I will say this, that it is – within our culture of the NBA and the brotherhood, when it comes to another player's money, we very, very rarely question that. We very rarely question that. That is just part of the culture. It's like, hey, if they're not offering you a long-term deal and there's someone else that will or someone that wants to, bro, like, you don't owe anything to me. You got to go get your money. And that's just part of the culture of the sport, is that, you know, you don't look at anybody else's pockets.
Gotcha. Richard, thanks for making time for us. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, guys.
You got it.
Thanks.
That's Richard Jefferson of Yes and of ESPN. And Yes has a special hour-long pregame show today before the Nets game to break down this Kyrie situation. It's fascinating. we said at the beginning of this this segment, the deal's not done yet. The deal's not official because they're trying to fold in a third team, which could bring in a more high-profile player if you package Dinwiddie with a couple of the first-round draft picks that the Nets have. So it'll be interesting to see what Sean Marks can pull together. But by the time the Nets play tonight, I think the deal will be done one way or the other, whether a two-way deal or a three-way deal. The interesting thing is with Finney Smith, he comes over. It's kind of complicated with the basic agreement. He can only be traded straight up if they decide to trade him. Dinwiddie could be part of a package deal, but because he was traded to a veteran contract, I believe. I might be off a little bit on the verbiage, but he can't. If he's traded again, he has to be traded straight up and not part of a package. So that's what we're looking at. Clippers and the Nets tonight.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
Don't know if many of you saw this, but Brian Cashman, the Yankee GM, was on 670 The Score. It's a radio station in Chicago. And essentially, he doesn't understand why Yankee fans were critical of this past season. Now, I'll read you Brian's quotes. Okay. So he was having dinner in Chicago with Omar Minaya, who he just hired to be an assistant, an advisor, and his, and Brian's son. And he said, it was funny. I was just talking to Omar Minaya. Last night, we're having a little dinner, and I was talking with him and my son, Teddy, and we were talking about how the season ended. I was like, how far did we get? We got knocked out in the first or second round. Omar was talking to me about it today. He was like, man, you guys are in it so much that you can't remember what happened. I'm like, well, you know, to be quite honest, Omar, the truth was in the end, we were four games short of a World Series appearance. But it felt like the way our fan base reacted and the press that we got knocked out in the first round. So you can't really remember sometimes reality versus a perception. And the perception was we didn't do well. The reality was we had a hell of another run at it, but fell short. But that's just the New York market. Then he goes on to say, am I so out of touch? No, it's the fans who are wrong. Now, I'm going to defend Brian here a little. He's essentially right in theory. When you go to the ALCS, it's a pretty good season. But he's wrong because the fans have been indoctrinated into thinking that way because of what your organization sells. And your players come out and say, if we don't win a World Series, it's a failure. And Derek Jeter has said that. And now Aaron Judge has taken that mantle and said that. So can you really blame fans for reacting right the way the organization is sold? World Series right or bust. George Steinbrenner said, either we win the World Series or it's a failure. So my point, Don and Peter, is this. And I've said this last year, too. The organization has to stop the messaging. They have to stop that messaging that the only thing that's viable is to win a World Series. It's ridiculous in this day and age, with the way the sport is and the layers of the playoffs, that you expect to win four out of five World Series in 5 years like they did in the 90s. It's not right going to happen. So, yeah, Brian's right. The fans might be wrong, but they're not. But I'm also saying the fans aren't wrong because that's what they're sold by the team of which right you work for.
They're taking the cue from you, Brian. And that's what I would tell Brian, is that you got to stop with this whole, you know, it was a good season garbage when you said on our air. The two things I'm going to say were both said on our air, so we're not speaking out of school. It's not about a championship. It's about championships, okay? And the other thing, when you were away in the summer, Peter and I had him on, and he talked about, he doesn't think about the winning. He thinks about the losing. He thinks about what happened in 02. He thinks about what happened in 03. He thinks about what happened in 04, which means this organization doesn't just celebrate championships. They're disgusted by losing. And now you're telling me in a year where your star player hits 62 home runs, you win 99 games, get bounced again by the Astros, that fan base is supposed to pick apart positives and walk away saying that was an enjoyable season? You're talking out of both sides of your mouth, man. What is it? Is the mission statement championship or bust, or are we supposed to enjoy going to the playoffs every year? So which one is it?
Yeah, it's hard because, again, essentially I think he's speaking truth, but he's not understanding that the fans' frustration is from all the years of winning and the fact that the organization sells itself as we are championship or bust.
Right.
That's it. Those are the words out of players' mouths, out of George Steinbrenner's mouth. So the organization must somehow, I don't know how you stop it now, they have to stop that messaging.
Well, you can't. See, that's the problem, because you'll get beat up if you do, because then you'll be admitting that it's not the same team. That you're just there, you're like everybody else, which is the truth now. I mean, I'm not trying to insult the Yankees, Michael, but they're like everybody else. There was a time when they had George and when they were spending money hand over fist, and they would go out and get every player that was possibly available, and they couldn't stomach losing, and they fired Dick Houser after 103 wins. They set a certain standard that anything other than lifting the trophy was an epic fail. How do you turn around and then say, well, we had a good season? Oh, come on, guys. We've gone to the playoffs almost every single year since 2009. We're relevant every single year. That's selling a different bill of goods to a fan base that would spit it back at them.
Yeah,
either own it or just have a big press conference to say the mission statement's different. But how do you do that?
It's hard to put the milk back in the udder.
Yeah.
But when you take a step back, though, they did have a good season. But they didn't win the World Series, which is what you're selling your fan base. So
right,
it's a hard thing to reconcile, Peter.
I agree. And listen, don't get me wrong. I get annoyed with the fans for feeling that way, because sometimes you're just like, oh my God, you don't know how good you have it. But at the same time, it's not like the Yankees have rescinded what their claim is. This is what the mission is, and it's been a long time since they've completed the mission.
Brian has job security. I'm surprised he said that publicly, because that does fly in the face of your organization's mission statement.
But getting swept by
your arch rival can't be looked at as a great season. They did have a really good season, and it was entertaining, and Yankee fans loved it. Ratings were sky high. They were tuning in. They came to the ballpark. But you did get swept by the Astros. Now, injuries played a role in why you got swept, but would you have won with LeMahieu and Carpenter healthy? I don't know. So it's a pretty brave thing for Brian to say.
But at the same time, Michael, I think the fans have to wake up, all right? I understand that you were sold a mission statement back in the day that it was win or bust, but it's time to start reading the tea leaves. Brian Cashman hasn't won a championship since 2009. This is, what, his second contract since then? So he continues to get renewed, right? Boone is coming back after what you could consider five failures of seasons because he didn't win a championship. But Boone still comes back. Cashman still comes back. So... and you hear what Brian said and all that, and it's held to a little bit of a different standard. They're not going after every single player that's available in free agent. They seem to be working with a self-constrained budget or cap. So they can say all they want, mission statement, championship or bust, but when you really look, actions speak louder than words, Michael. The actions tell you that there is a certain satisfaction that this regime has with where they are. They're relevant every year. They win close to 100 games every year. They're in the playoffs pretty much every year. Is it possible that under Hal, they are accomplishing their mission?
I don't know. They're not publicly saying what their mission is. The only public statement the last one we've heard is championship or bust. And the players play into that, Don.
But when Judge says we either win
a championship or it's a failure, that's not good.
Well, good on Judge, Michael, but he's not the one that's making all the decisions. He's not the one that's cutting the checks. He's not the one that's extending the contracts. Actions speak louder than words. Don't the actions tell you that Hal is satisfied with the current regime?
No.
Is he satisfied with his manager? Is he satisfied with his general manager?
He is satisfied by his manager and general manager. He has a $300 million payroll this upcoming season.
Right.
So he wants to win. He didn't have to sign Carlos Rodon.
I didn't say he doesn't want to win. What I'm saying is he dissatisfied with their performance?
No, he's not, because he thinks that if things go right, that group of people will bring them a championship. He doesn't think they're not winning championships because of them.
Okay, but still, if this is mission statement number one is to win a championship, then Brian and Boone have not done that, and yet they still keep their jobs. So obviously he must be happy with their jobs. Now, they obviously make moves, but it has not cost Brian a dime. He's gotten two renewals of his contract since the last time they won a World Series. If the mission statement was championship or bust, would that be the case? Or would they be looking for another general manager? Would they be looking for another manager?
Again, we can go round and round. I think the mission statement is to win championships, but Hal Steinbrenner doesn't think they're not winning it because of the manager and the GM. That things have gone wrong.
Okay.
Now,
well, let's leave the manager aside.
In 2017, they felt they got cheated on, and they lost in seven games. And then in 2019, they also felt they got cheated on, and they lost again six games to the Astros. Last year, they have no kick coming.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoon starting at 3 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.